This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
I know this much. The home team last night in Raleigh, North Carolina was dog and ponying it. It was 10-1 by the time you had your first bite of popcorn. 10-1 Wolfpack, and they said, not tonight, Duke. Catch you later. Yeah, we know. You're sixth in the country. Yeah, we get all that. Those are cool uniforms you got on.
They look good, by the way. Man, those jerseys look good.
But NC State
we may never see them again after last night.
Nah, you will. NC State put on a show last night. Mr. Johnson goes for 28. Daniels for 25. Thunderbird 21-9. And all of a sudden, NC State found exactly what they've been looking for. A big-time Quadrant 1 W. And even old Joe Lenardi, who will join us later in the program, had to take notice. And guess who is in as of today if you love your bracketology? That'd be the red and white of NC State.
Sure. Why wouldn't you be, right?
They were good.
Yep. Markell Johnson, by the way, was sensational last night. For all the kind of indifferent efforts, you know, he had a tough start the other night at Boston College. I think one assist, four turnovers in the first 6 minutes of the game last night. And I thought Seth Greenberg made an interesting observation. It was important for NC State to play the game in five-minute blocks. And I'm glad they were able to kind of, he and producer Kim Belton got it together where they were showing you what was happening in those five-minute blocks, Pack. And that really kind of drilled down to just how dominant NC State was in the first half.
And when you see a shot like this going in halftime,
it's your night.
Finish on the run, you just kind of figure, hey, you know what? It might just be our night.
Yep.
You just give me a sign. That might be our night. How many times you thought about that? This, you know what? Might be my night.
Rarely.
So the half-court heave didn't work for you?
No, it was for Markell. It worked.
It was awesome.
Not
third
for
time
me.
He's done it.
All right, NC State's 8-7. This morning, they are fifth in the ACC.
Right where I had them in the counting on Monday.
Despite the loss at Boston College,
I had him fifth.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know if we can roll the standings up here real quick before we get to these other games. We touched on this in the first hour, but I want to show you the group now from 8-6.
Excuse me?
The group at 8 wins and 6 wins.
Okay.
Okay. NC State's 8, a bushel of folks at 7.
That's a glob. Not a bushel. A
the glob rounds out at 6.
That's right.
That's what I said in the first hour. I think we're headed for a regular season of somebody tied three or more at one spot.
NC State is the top of the glob, Wes. Then there's a spot. From that spot where it sees Notre Dame with the 7, Syracuse with a 7, Clemson with a 7, Georgia Tech with a 7, BC with a 7, Virginia Tech and Pitt with a 6, along
Miami. Yeah.
That's the glob. That's the glob right now.
8-6? Or 7-6.
I think it's 7-6 because that win by NC State last night, I think elevates them kind of in a little bit of a cut. Now they're not done. They got this opportunity with Florida State. They're going to see Duke again.
Yes, in 11 days.
Right, which won't be happy time. I don't think in Cameron for them. But nevertheless,
you're already predicting it could go 22 the other way.
I think when you take Coach K's boys and say, hey, you know what? We know you haven't won the regular season in a decade.
Right.
I think it's important for Duke. I don't know if they mean say no, no, no. But I think Duke wants to win this thing. I mean, the one.
The regular season.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I mean, they've been a favorite in the preseason a gazillion times and haven't done it. It's 10 years since the last time Duke won the outright ACC regular season.
Yes, it has been.
And I know K's won 18 trillion games and a handful of banners of national championships. But, you know, you also want to – they want to compete and win. And you want to be the first-place team. And because in the ACC tournament, if you're the one guy, if we do have that chalkish kind of deal, you don't want to be the 2-3 having to see each other in the semis. That's a fist fight.
You just like Duke Carolina last year in Charlotte.
Same thing.
The fist fight.
You don't want – if you have – it's kind of like the college football playoffs.
I mean, 4-1 wasn't a cakewalk for Virginia either, because Florida State beat them.
To me, though, it's very similar to the college football playoff. We had three great teams, and then whoever you want to put it for.
Sure.
Everybody wanted to be one because you didn't want to be the 2-3 matchup, which happened to be Ohio State Clemson.
Right.
So I think it's very similar in the ACC. We got three really good teams, and Virginia's starting to get their act together offensively, which is tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to be one. I don't need to be 2-3.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I am. Here's the thing about Duke. I wonder, given that, you know, they had eaten a lot and they weren't hungry last night, according to the coach.
That's what coach said.
Yeah. I wonder how much between now and the next NC State game, or better than that, the Virginia game before that, at Virginia is going to be a huge game for the Blue Devils.
Yep.
That's the next mile marker. If you thought NC State had a chance to be a mile marker last night, I promise you Virginia's going to be one.
Yep.
So let's go Brett in Kentucky with Packer and Durham this morning. Hey, Brett, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'm just curious who you think of the top three teams, the Duke, Florida State, Louisville, who has the advantage coming down the home stretch? Obviously, you know, Louisville and Florida State still have to play each other. Does that give Duke an advantage? I'm just curious who you guys think is going to be the one to come out of that on top.
That's a good question. And I think the answer changed a little bit based on last night's result, because Duke was certainly in the catbird seat prior to the game against NC State.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a tough call, because now you've seen Louisville give you a week of inconsistency, even though I thought they were much better last night.
Right.
Florida State has been untouchable at home. But
they only got two home games in their last five.
Right. That's where I was going with that. And now you've got Duke, who stubbed their toe last night. And you just mentioned the Virginia game. You know the emotion of seeing NC State again, not to mention North Carolina again at home. I think if this is one of those deals, you put them in a hat and pull one out. I don't feel like anybody right now has got the upper hand.
Is Brett still with us? See you off the line.
Sounds like he's gone.
Brett, I'm going to guess, yeah. Are you a Louisville fan?
I am.
How do you feel with the final four games being Carolina at home, at Florida State, Virginia Tech at home, and at Virginia?
Well, the Florida State game scares me just because they kind of manhandled us when they came to the Yum Center. And then Virginia, I mean, come on. We just beat Virginia for the first time in 10 games. So, yeah. You know, I don't have a whole lot of confidence.
All right.
That
well,
we can
that's
go 4-0.
Well, my point being this, I need to see one more example from the Cards before I'm ready to announce your return to form, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Last night was a great first step, but mentally for me, there's still the Atlanta and the Clemson performance there.
I think they get the right team, though, this week.
Carolina? Yeah,
home.
Plus the way, you know, the way they want to play.
Yep.
I mean, and Carolina, as we know from time to time, labors to score. So
especially when it matters.
Yes. I would say this. I don't like Louisville just yet in this mix. I kind of like Florida State, to be honest with you, because I think they travel. I think they can play on the road, and I know it's at NC State Saturday, at Clemson, at Notre Dame, but Louisville and BC at home.
But those are three tough road games that they will have to play well in all three of those. I don't think they can have an off day on the road in any of those games and feel like, hey, we can still win the game.
And you bring up an interesting point, though. I think, and not that it didn't matter to other Duke teams, okay? But something about this regular season feels like it matters to Duke.
I think they're tired of the hey, you know what? We've accomplished everything there is in this sport, and this coach is going to go down as one of the greatest coaches of all time, regardless of sport.
Right.
But you go a 10-year period at Duke without winning the ACC regular season championship, and I know the conference tournament's where the guy gets the championship label.
Sure, sure.
But, you know, to me, your regular season – there's a pretty good handle on who's the best team in the league. I know we got the unbalanced schedules, but when you're Duke, you don't go 10 years without winning that thing at least once.
Right.
So I do think it matters to the folks in Durham, North Carolina.
Yeah.
If you're a competitor, you want to win, right? I mean, you don't just kind of roll after and go, yeah, if we finish second, we're cool with that. No, not that guy right there.
No,
I don't think so.
No, he's pretty, he's pretty here to serious win about it.
Yeah, we're here to win it.
Yeah, I'm going to be, I would say, Brett, I would favor Duke at this point.
Still.
Yeah, because I like the three home games. The others only have two left. I think the three home games are all winnable. Virginia Tech, State, Carolina. The road games at Wake. I mean, Duke's never really been in trouble in Winston-Salem. It's not been the house of horrors that PNC's been, right?
Right, no doubt.
Okay. At Virginia, I mean, each of the top three have a war daddy left.
That Virginia game, though.
Ooh.
When the Hoos can give you some offense tied in with their consistent defense and their championship DNA.
And they haven't played.
They haven't played. I know. That to me is not one of those you just go, oh, yeah, we're good there.
Vernon Carey in the pack line is going to be interesting.
No question.
Because the last time he saw anything resembling the pack line was when he played Louisville. Because they run a different concept of it, as I understand, but still.
When they finally broke the 70 barrier at Louisville, which was a great game, and Louisville was terrific down the stretch and had to be to win the game, we kicked around the idea, hey, is this kind of the opening of the offensive, you know, is this a momentum builder for Virginia offensively? And then last night, they go 78 on BC, in which all five starters are in double figures, which has been like pulling teeth in Charlottesville. Beware of the Hoos. I'm just telling you now. If they can give you some offense, they're going to be a difficult team to deal with.
We don't necessarily have today to cover this, but it is interesting, I think, here in the last week or so. Chris Mack in Louisville off the slide in Atlanta and the loss at Clemson talking about mentality of his team. Mike Krzyzewski talking about mentality of his team last night. As we get to these 20 games in the ACC this year, we're starting to find out more coaches being a little bit more revealing about the confidence level of his particular team. You know, is that something that is coming about maybe more this year than others because of the 20 games? Possibly. I think there's something to be said. And case in point, I'll give you an example. Let's use NC State as an example. You take that shot Sunday night at Boston College, and then you come back and beat Duke last night 22, and now guess what? You're up to bat on Saturday, 4 o'clock here on ACC. I mean, it's just that simple sometimes. The mentality and the confidence level and all those things, beyond the X's and O's, the strategies and everything else, Pack. Now it's really about how's your team's approach going to be? What's their thinking? That kind of thing. Well, I think it's maybe playing itself out a little more in that regard.
Here's the other thing too, Wes. The one thing we knew in the middle of the summer when somebody brought up ACC basketball is we didn't have anybody returning on first team or second team.
Right.
It was going to be one of the most unique years of ACC hoops because of the unknown. You have a bunch of kids that are going to be thrown in a starting role who haven't been through an ACC grind before, much less a 20-game conference schedule. Mm-hmm. And you've kind of seen everybody kind of hit the wall at some point in time.
Good point.
Some earlier, some later. I mean, as good as Louisville's been playing, they gave you a week last week. You went, I don't know who those dudes are, right? Mm-hmm. Duke, man, a great win against Florida State. They come off the ground. Unbelievable comeback from North Carolina. Hey, last night, it just looked like they were, man, I'd rather be anywhere else than playing a game tonight. It happens to everybody. And so now you kind of hope you got everything in the rearview mirror for this stretch drive of not only the rest of the regular season, but even more importantly, postseason. And so when you have three teams as deep as Florida State, Louisville, and Duke, they have a humongous advantage. Now we'll see who's able to maximize that coming down the stretch. Again, if you're a fan, you got to love watching all this stuff. Got to love it.
You know what you get tomorrow?
More color-coded?
A whole new color-coded card.
I figured as much.
Yep.
How about we talk some tennis?
Oh, we're going to do it when we come back.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
You know, Wes, this is our 125th show.
Yeah, it is.
And the very first time, to my knowledge, that we've gone women's tennis.
I think that's right.
I think this is correct.
Well, why not go with the champ?
Estella, good morning. ¿Cómo está? Is she there?
Good morning.
No. ¿Cómo está?
Muy bien. Muchas gracias. Thank you very much for having me this morning.
De nada.
Great. Here we go. Estella, easy with him. You never know what you're getting here. It's great to have you with us. congratulations on the championship, obviously, a year ago. But also congratulations on last Saturday night in Delray Beach. That had to be an amazing experience to play in a professional event, huh?
Yes, that was just such a cool experience. Sometimes I thought that I was in a movie, in a dream. I have never played in front of that many people, so it was just amazing, and I think I learned a lot from that. And, you know, just playing against Coco, that was just great.
Estella, forget this a second. Let's get to some real business.
Oh, I don't know that. Now, these are good pictures. You got all this moment here.
I know. This is big time. I get all this. But let's talk about what you miss the most about Madrid, Spain, which is, I've been there. It's one of the most beautiful cities in the world. I know Miami's incredibly cool. And there is a little characteristic thing going on there from a food and cultural standpoint. But what do you miss the most about Madrid?
Oof, that's a tough question. Honestly, I would say the food. That's amazing. I'm trying to find something similar here in Miami. They have Cuban food. But honestly, there's no place like home. Yeah. Also, I think sometimes, you know, around 8 p.m., just going out with my friends to get some tapas. That's pretty unique also. But again, Miami is just incredible. And I'm just so happy that I've been able to experience this. And the last 4 years have been just unreal.
I bet so. But so you haven't found a great spot for paella in Miami? I'm surprised. Surely there's a great spot somewhere.
I mean, people try to, like, imitate it, you know?
Not the same.
But,
I know. I know what you're talking about. You know, that. And again,
it's kind of like me most mornings with Pac.
We'll get to your tennis. But, again, I've spent some time in Spain, and I love Barcelona. And I just told you during the break that our oldest daughter studied in Sevilla and loved it. And the people there are so great because they just know how to have good times. They understand what life's about. And they have things totally in perspective. And I'm sure, just watching your highlights, I know you love what you're doing. Miami's an incredible place. Again, there are some similarities there. But I've always found that everybody I meet from Spain just loves life. They love people. They want everybody to have a good time.
Yes, I think, I agree. I think we're very welcoming. And we appreciate a lot, having a good time, spending time with our families. And obviously here I have my teammates, my coaches. They are my second family to me, but there's no place like home, honestly.
Estella, from a tennis perspective, the move to the University of Miami, obviously for your college career. I can look at the national championships, the semis. I mean, you're one of four ACC players in history to be a two-time singles semifinalist. I mean, there's all sorts of things you've accomplished from a tennis perspective. But what kind of expectations did you have? I mean, I'm sure your expectations were high when you came to Coral Gables. Have you met all those expectations or have you exceeded them?
I think I came here as a freshman just knowing that I was going to give my best these 4 years. I didn't know the system, so I was a little bit not doubting myself, but I didn't understand how college tennis worked. And I think that once I got here and I understood the culture of the program, I think that gave me strength and confidence. And it told me a lot, I knew that I could accomplish many things, and not only as a tennis player, but also as a person. And it's just been an amazing process. And Paige, my coach, she's been helping me every step of the way. And I'm just super thankful.
Well, you're the two-time ACC Player of the Year, certainly a chance to win it for a third time. ACC Scholar Athlete of the Year, 392 in economics. You're the smartest economics student in this show right now.
That is not true.
That is true.
That is not
yes,
true.
Yes, she is. She's smarter than you, 392.
I had a Clemson.
No.
Yeah. No, you're better than Pac by just a nudge, maybe. I'm just fascinated that, here's somebody who's incredibly talented, and you come to a different continent and a different country to take that next step. And yet it seems to have been very successful for you. I mean, did you?
Yeah.
You said, you were doubting it, but looks like it's worked out perfectly.
Yeah, I think I've never thought of expectations of or what people thought about me or, you know, stuff like that. I don't think that that helps. I think it's important to understand the big picture and just trying to learn a little bit more each day, you know, with each practice, with each meeting, with each match. I think you can take away many things and And I don't know, it's just been amazing. And, you know, results sometimes just come on their own when you work really hard. And I think all these accomplishments are just like a way of seeing all this hard work paid off. And I'm just really, really happy about that.
All right, let's get back to you from a personal standpoint a second, because we know you're a great tennis player. You're hanging out at South Beach with your girlfriends, your buds, whatever the case may be. Who is the most famous person that you have bumped into in Miami?
Actually, I don't even know. I don't think I've actually met a famous person. I mean, I've seen houses of, you know, Murray, Beckham, many celebrities.
Yeah.
But honestly, I've never had the opportunity of meeting them. Last week I practiced with Venus Williams.
Wow.
And that was actually the such a cool experience.
I bet. So how did that come about that you could practice with Venus? How did that all get started?
Well, it was just like a long story. Her coach is a University of Miami alumni. Mm-hmm. So he basically needed somebody to practice with and I had some free time, so it was great. And I think she was so inspiring, and she gave me some tips for the future, and I really appreciated that.
So just for example, because there's a lot of tennis players that are watching our show, believe it or not, what was one tip of somebody who's had so many great accomplishments as you? Give me one tip that you went, you know what, that's a great idea. Just give me one.
Well, I think every tennis player has to have, like, a weapon, you know, something that really can make a difference and that a person can rely on when things get a little bit tight on a match or when you start doubting your confidence. I think it's important to have something that you can always rely on and that you really trust, and that's going to give you a lot of confidence and strength.
So let's get this straight now. You practiced with Venus Williams last week and then played Coco Gauff in Delray Beach. It's a pretty good week, right? I mean, that's not a bad run a few days for you, right?
Listen, that was just crazy and amazing.
I love it. All right, we do this with every student athlete that appears on the show.
Oh, this is going to be good.
And if you say Spanish, I'm going to come after you.
Yeah, just we're not going to accept Spanish.
What is the hardest course that you've taken at the University of Miami?
Oof. Okay, I took last semester finance.
Mm-hmm.
I was struggling big time. I was just so confused with the stocks, with the investments. And I don't even know how I got an A at the end. I think the professor felt sorry for me, or he knew that I was actually giving my best. Because that final was cumulative and it lasted 3 hours.
Ooh.
And at the end, I was just like, I think I'm going to play tennis. I'm going to stick to it. And, you know, I can just leave the investments and the stocks for the future.
I got good news for you. If you continue on your career path, because you are a great player.
Yes, you are.
You will have somebody that will be able to take care of all the financial spot. You don't worry about that stuff. You just go play.
Yep.
But you are some kind of player, and it's cool to have you on. And, again, just nothing but continued success. We look forward to watching you just continue to do great stuff. And you were doing awesome.
Well, thank you very much. You know, when you enjoy what you do and you have passion for it, I think it's easy. And, you know, the support system that I have behind me is just incredible. And I would never be where I am right now if it wasn't for them.
Very
so
cool.
I think it's not just about me, but all the team that that is doing a lot of work. And again, I'm just super grateful. And thank you so much for having me.
Adios.
See you later. Thanks, Estella.
Thank you.
All right. Estella Perez Somariba, NCAA champion. Awesome.
So good.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Busy power hour. Loved Estella, our first female tennis player, and she's awesome.
Yes.
Big time.
C.
Very good, Wes. You are starting to pick up on this.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. This next segment was a creation.
Oh, wait a second. You're going to start to assess blame already?
I'm not going to blame anybody. I'm just going to just let you guys set this one up, and then I'm going to go off on it. Go for it.
Who's excited? Everybody excited about this now? Are you?
Roll
how about
this,
that hearty endorsement there?
I love when we get this kind of stuff.
Can I get the Lumberjacks involved in this real quick before we dive into this?
Whoever
Whoever
wants to take ownership of this one, please
about,
do.
Before ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Josh Macri on the left, Drew Brooks on the right. They run this show. They are the leaders and drivers on the Winnebago. Don't shake your head, Brooks.
That would be Alice. I pressed the wrong button.
Oh.
Case in point, he can't even press the right button.
Okay, can you still bitter about last night, apparently, is Mr. Macri.
What makes you say that?
Last chance last night.
All right, can you
put up a heck of a fight, though.
Let's originate the topic before Packer just shelves this thing. Can you tell us how this topic originated? Because our great staff hatched this idea, and I like it, actually, even though Pack hates it.
So I will be honest with you. We liked it a lot more until we actually looked at the rankings, because this came off of Brian Ives' Twitter. Brian obviously crying about North Carolina losing close games. Then Reese Davis quote tweeted Brian Ives talking about how unlucky North Carolina was and how they have the 331st most unlucky team in Division I college basketball. Reese then in the tweet mentioned that Washington was the most unluckiest team. Most unluckiest, or did you just say unluckiest?
Unluckiest.
The unluckiest team in Division I college basketball, to which I thought North Carolina was second to last, but it turns out they're not. They're 331st, and there's like 350 Division I college basketball teams. But we wanted to look at which teams in the ACC were the most unlucky. And
Here we are. The
bottom three are Clemson, Syracuse, and North Carolina.
All right. Now, when you take Clemson into account.
What are we doing here?
Syracuse into account. Well, this is analytics, and I know the reason I'm excited about this because I know what a big fan you are.
I mean, first of all, who knew there was such a – I did not know.
Oh, yeah, this has existed for a few years.
Who knew there was such a thing as luck ratings?
Oh, yeah. Ken Pomeroy, the mathematician, is a wizard and created the Ken Pom rankings.
And by the way, Jim Boeheim got a hold of Ken Pom last night in his post-game rant, and it was beautiful.
Did he blow up Ken Pom?
Destroyed it.
Okay.
I want to read that quote before we talk about anything else. He said, craziest thing I have never heard this until this year. I've been in this a long time. This is Boeheim talking. I think I know a little bit about this game. I've never heard, well, this guy's 25% responsible for this case. This guy's 35%. Are you kidding me? I'm telling you, I can get a kindergartner who could tell you better than they can tell you. He's not a fan of Ken Pom.
Coming off a 24-point loss.
Yeah. Jim Boeheim all over it last
night. Did you hear
night.
The alum, by the way? The alum just tossed a gallon of the Sky Chief up on that fire.
Stuck the pom-poms right back in the trash can.
Yeah, he did.
Right, let's get back to these unlucky teams.
Right, so basically what we're looking at is actual performance versus expected performance.
Right.
Is basically what this comes down to.
Okay, so let's take the Carolina scenario here because – it's much more pronounced, Pack.
Oh, my God.
I mean, look at all the last-second shots,
Let me get this right now. I just want to make sure I'm following along with everybody trying to connect the dots, because this is way in over my head of luck rankings. A team that was picked to finish second in the preseason poll is currently 15th. Apparently, they're unlucky. Is that what you're telling me?
And look,
that's a yes-no question.
Yes.
I think it's got much more to do than luck.
All right, but here is ACC game-tying or go-ahead field goal attempts against Carolina, and look at the games. Now, Duke is on there twice. Virginia Tech could be on there a couple different times too. But these are the make probabilities with 3 seconds or less in regulation or overtime.
Is this supposed to make you feel good when you're in last place or having a terrible year? That there's a thing called luck rankings?
And look at this one. 0.3 chance all 6 shots go in.
I got news for all of you. It might have something to do with your own players not making plays. Your coach not having a chance to make good calls. Hey, I know luck's part of the game, but let's not get carried away to something called luck rankings. It's one of the stupidest things I've ever heard.
But wait.
So let me get this right. The Cincinnati Bengals were unlucky last year? No, they just weren't very good.
All right.
North Carolina is 3-13 or 12 or whatever they are. Hey, here's an idea. Maybe they're just not very good. Wake Forest is 4-13. Maybe Wake's just not very good. Luck rankings.
Well, see, here's the other part, though. This is why I was intrigued by this. It's not that Carolina was at the bottom, because you can look at that and go, okay, well, Carolina's not been very lucky, and there are half dozen examples to show. When you look at the other side of this.
Make a play.
Okay, but now let's go to the teams that are regarded as lucky. Now watch this one.
Because apparently you guys are really into this luck.
No, it's just an interesting stat or an interesting analytic to look at.
I think it's ridiculous.
And here's one
reason
why. Would you think of Boston College as being lucky this year?
I think they're average.
Well, guess what? They're 8th in the country in the luck ratings.
It proves my point of how stupid this luck ratings thing is.
BC 7-9 after last night's loss. Now, these were before last night. Florida State's 24th, top 25.
Hey,
and Virginia's in the top 50.
I get that you can get a call. You're fortunate to get a break. But to put any stock in luck rankings is ludicrous.
How about this, though? I bet Sunday night NC State people are like, I understand why they're top 10 in luck ratings.
I think it's
interesting
stupid.
To look at.
I think it's stupid. I think it's really
well. We knew that
stupid.
Before you started.
I didn't even know it existed. When y'all were talking, we're going to do a segment on luck ratings. I'm like, what are you guys talking about? Well, KenPom's got. I don't care what KenPom does. That is utterly stupid.
By the way, of the 350.
Was North Carolina unlucky missing 17 free throws against Duke, or was that just, oh, I don't know.
Yes.
Oh, please. That's got everything to do with talent or maybe not being gifted enough to make big plays when it matters. How about that? In terms of reality versus this fantasy nonsense.
There's Crispy. And then there's Crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
We do have Joe Lenardi, Mike Bray coming up in the Power Hour, but now we go down to Tigertown where John Newman III been rocking and rolling, doing his thing. He's going to join us for the first time. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are y'all?
We are outstanding. The first question to you is simple.
Yeah.
Saturday, when you guys are laying out Louisville and taking him to the woodshed, were you guys good or were you just lucky?
Ah, man, that's good, man. You know, that's what we do. That's what we do. You know, we come through when it's game time. So
that's right.
So it's not luck. It was just good, right? That was good.
Yeah, that one right there was just good. You know, some people got luck, but you know,
do you think Louisville was unlucky or were they just outplayed?
I think they just got outplayed.
That's a player call. What is
that?
You guys are in an interesting spot here because you've been watching the league play out this week. The off week to me is always interesting, especially when it falls this time of year in conference play. Mm-hmm. So what's this week been like coming off the Louisville win and getting ready to make that road trip to Boston College?
Really just like it's been a good week, but I think we just kind of getting back focused and getting ourselves back going, trying to get ready to pick up another big road win. So I've been focused. My team's focused. We're pretty good at, like, bouncing back and kind of moving on to the next thing. So we're just real focused, and we're just ready to go for the next battle.
John, the win against Pittsburgh last week seemed to be a catalyst because you took that thing on the road, and apparently Pitt was unlucky when you guys won by 20. That doesn't happen very often with Clemson basketball on the road in ACC games. But that performance really kind of sparked you the whole week. I mean, you guys were out of sight last week, even in that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we came up big in that game. You know, I got in some foul trouble early, but I was just real proud to have my teammates, just everybody from the bench stepped in, played a big role. Guys are getting big rebounds. Alex Hemingway coming in, he's hitting big shots now. He's kind of been like a good spark off the bench. And, you know, everybody just kind of delivered and did their part. So I think when everybody kind of just does their thing and sticks to the game plan, that's kind of the results that you get.
John, I want to ask you about last year and this year, because obviously you've seen a lot of basketball now in just two short years playing for the Tigers. And I'm curious as to how this is evolved for this year and how much of it is based on the experiences you guys had last year. Because Pac was talking earlier in the week, you guys played a lot of those 1-3 and 5-point games last year.
Lost them all,
and,
seemed like.
And seemingly unlucky, weren't very successful. Apparently. But now, unlucky last year. But what's the scenario for this team? Because now, you've had some moments this year. In fact, you guys have had more moments this year than maybe in the last couple of years combined.
Yeah. I think it's just, it kind of just says we're a different group of guys. Last year, I think we had more experience, and those guys, like, sometimes with experience, it comes with, like, you know, you can get in chill mode sometimes and, you know, be relaxed. But this group, we're a group of young guys with a good blend of older guys, but we all just got something to prove out here. So, I think we move with a different sense of urgency and play with a different sense of fire, because a lot of us are, you know, I'm still trying to prove myself. Amir's still trying to prove himself. Everybody is kind of, you know, we got goals and stuff, and we're trying to reach them. So it kind of just pushes us to push our teammates and really push ourselves. And I think that's why we're kind of coming out with those victories, because we just find a way to win.
All right. Last Saturday obviously was just the latest one. There's the Duke win. There's obviously the win in Chapel Hill. All those count, mm-hmm. though. They build up as the season goes on. So how much does that stuff that's happened already help you in this stretch, which, by the way, is, you know, you guys find yourselves this morning at 7-8, tied with Notre Dame and Georgia Tech. I mean, and you still got – Georgia Tech left a couple times on the schedule.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we just try to take it one game at a time, really. We believe we can beat anybody when we're at our best. So right now it's just about being mature and trying to be at our best every single night out. And I think that's something that we're very capable of doing. It just comes with, you know, bringing that same focus and practice every day. And I put in the group message one time, like, we know what it's like to be at the top now. So, like, why not do the things every day that it takes to be at the top? And I think that's, we're kind of gradually getting there as a team. So it's going to be exciting to see over these next couple of weeks what happens.
John, Wes mentioned three of the highlight games, the win at North Carolina, beating Duke when they were in the number three, and, of course, what happened Saturday against Louisville. Of those three, again, I know every win's a good one and feels good and you move on to the next game, but of the three big ones there, was there one of those three that stood out to you that was a little maybe different than anything else?
Probably the Duke game, just because, like, I think that was like my first time, like, beating a team of like that has that kind of like hype behind their name, and then and we was at home for real. Like, that's what made it the best thing. Like, we're at home, so like to be able to like celebrate with your home crowd and the court storming. Like, I'd never been in a part of a court storming before, I don't think. And so just to be a part of that, and then I had a bunch of family there and a lot of friends watching the game. So it was way bigger than just winning the game. It was a lot of people that support me and stuff, and I really do it for them. So them being able to watch that and tune in to us kind of making history, that was huge. That Duke game was lit.
All right. I almost have two questions, but I'm going to go to our traditional one for every student athlete that comes on this show. We are always curious. What is the hardest course that you've had at Clemson University?
The hardest course I've had? Oh, that's tough. I'll probably go with, last semester I took a stats class, and that was kind of hard. Like, I studied real hard for that one. I mean, I still, like, I got a decent grade in it, but, like, it was just hard though, because I really earned that one. Like, I really worked. I put the work in for that one. So that was kind of hard stats for sure.
Were you lucky to get that grade, or were you unlucky?
I say for this one, I'm gonna put a little bit of luck in there.
All right. Here's the other thing: people that have followed basketball on the East Coast and in particular in the Southeast, know of Johnny Newman that played in the NBA, who played at the University of Richmond. And he's your cousin. Your dad played at James Madison in the late 1980s. So the question becomes, how many times do you get mistaken as the son of Johnny Newman, the former Richmond Spider who played in the NBA and was an original Charlotte Hornet, by the way, Pat?
Of course, back when they were good.
Back when the Hornets were good. That's right. How many times do you get mistaken as Johnny Newman's son and not John Newman's son?
Oh, man. Too many times, man. I feel like since that narrative that I was his son, that started when I was around like 13. So I'd say now it's been at least, that I know of, at least 50 times that people have just told people the wrong thing. Like, that I'm his son. Like, one time I was on Twitter or whatever, and I had seen somebody, like, favorite something, and they was like, yeah, I just confirmed he's Johnny Newman's son of the Hornets. I'm like, bruh, who confirmed that? Like, where is this information coming from? Like, they really needed fact check some stuff. But, yeah, my dad played at Page High School in Greensboro, and then he went on to play at James Madison for 4 years. He was like a 2-year captain there. So,
I know who your dad was. Your dad was and I don't know what he tells you, but if he tells you he was good, he was better than that.
Yeah.
He was a tremendous he was good now. Yeah, he was very good. He had some real game. He played for a great coach in Mac Morris at Page High School in Greensboro. Yeah. And I know it'll mean something to you to play in the tournament in Greensboro this year too, won't it?
Oh yeah, a whole lot, Like, growing up in Greensboro, you know, you may get to leave class early to go to the ACC tournament, or while games are going on, like, everybody kind of like class kind of goes on pause when the ACC tournament is on, like, and people are usually playing the games on TV, so we're not even really doing work. We're watching the ACC basketball, so growing up in that kind of environment where it's that big of a deal, it's gonna mean a lot, especially with a lot of kids from Greensboro watching and you know, kind of looking up to me.
Great to have you on the show, man. Thanks for the time. Good luck this weekend.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Appreciate y'all for having me.
You bet. John Newman III of the Clemson Tigers. Great to have him with us. We're going to talk about the battle for first.
By the way, no comment regarding the luck and unluck thing from a player who just absolutely took our segment and shoved it.
Yeah.
Got nothing to do with luck.
He was fabulous.
You can play or you can't.
Yeah.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.